And a good Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in, Chasing Big Joe. 1025, 1063, the game. He's Big Joe Dewin. I'm Chase McCabe. Nick Frazier, Dr. Crane on the ones and twos. Hoping you're having a great start to your day so far. JoJo, what's up?
We're on at 8:59. Oh, it just turned 9 o'clock. Good morning, buddy. Good morning. We celebrated a Nashville Predators win last night.
Well, we did. Happy for that. Colton Sisson's going to join us here in just a few minutes. And we'll get his thoughts on the Predators' win last night, 3-0 over the Chicago Blackhawks in Smashville.
I would love to have a hidden camera on Sisson's when the Preds PR staff goes to him last night and says, "Hey, tomorrow morning, get to go on the radio with these two guys. You know, you've done it before," and just to see his reaction,
I think he would be Chasing Big Joe, I love those guys.
I think he's calls his agent, is this part of my contract? I'm not quite sure. He's I know that one guy asked really good questions, another guy is really stupid, but I'll play along with it.
Yeah, so we'll talk to Colton here in just a few minutes and get his thoughts on the win and back at it at home on Thursday, and I probably should look up Calgary.
Yeah, Calgary. 90s yeah, that's night. A big game.
90s night at Bridgestone Arena.
On Thursday. So, we had Colton come on in a few moments, but can we throw a question of the day out?
Yeah, let's go ahead and throw that out there because we'll get to that after Colton.
So, 20 years ago today, and I tweeted it out on Facebook, whatever, Gary Anderson kicked the field goal in overtime when the Titans beat the Ravens in that improbable victory at Baltimore. Remember, it was the last playoff win on the road until they beat the Chiefs in the 2017 season. So for 14 seasons, we all talked about, the Titans can't win a game on the road. But that was 20 years ago today. So the question was coming up, what's your favorite positive today? What's your favorite Titan moment, not the Music City Miracle? And I remember that game vividly. Remember, that's when Eddie and Ray squared off. I know Derek Mason in the game and all that. And the Ravens was a great football team, and the Titans really had no chance to win. Remember, Fisher calls Gary Anderson up. He's in some remote fishing village in Canada. Yeah.
Because then he got hurt, right?
Right. So he comes to Nashville, kicks a field. I don't even know how long it was the team, maybe 2 days, and kicks a 46-yard field goal. And the tweet's this 70-year-old man kicks a 46, and he had the single bar face. I mean, it was one of the greatest moments ever, one of the best pitchers ever, when he's running off the field kicking that field goal. So,
isn't Derek hugging him?
Not in the picture I saw, but I'm sure there's
one that was hanging in Nissan Stadium in the press box that had Derek hugging him. And the reason I remember this is because we used to give Derek crap about hating kickers.
Yeah.
And I saw that picture, and I took a picture of the picture, and I was proof that Derek loves kickers.
And he loves old men. I mean, Derek cares about old men and makes sure they're okay. And it was just, he was so old at the time. And
Floyd made a joke one time, goes, "Yeah, Gary was older than I was."
But Fisher went and found him, and he was in some remote fishing village in Canada. Yeah. And they brought him in, and he did that. So it's an amazing moment. And, I'm not the biggest Titans fan ever. I support them. I hope they win. It's good for the hometown. But that was just a critical and crucial moment in their history. So I want to hear from anybody else. There's other moments that I've forgotten about that it'd be great. So hit us on the text line, 615-737-1025.
That's a good one. Mine, because it was just such a big moment during during those days in playing Indianapolis, but I was also with my dad, and it's just one of those, with my dad moments that I'll always remember, when Baronis hit the 60-yarder.
Yeah.
I was at that game.
Against the Colts. That's the year the Colts won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. But and it was a magnificent coaching job by Fisher because he got Dungy to blow his timeouts.
Right.
Because remember, they showed punt. They came out for the field goal, and then Dungy calls a timeout, or Fisher calls it. I can't remember exactly the sequence, but then they go out for punt, and he makes him blow another timeout, and then he puts Baronis back out there, and he kicks it. So
60-yarder, yeah. And then it was funny if, 2 years later, he doesn't let Baronis try a 58-yard field goal versus the Texans in that 13-3 season in 2008. But
yeah,
you got one chance to win it, man. Go for it right there. That's a good moment, yeah.
So what's yours? The Anderson one?
I just think it was so improbable. Covering that football team at the time, they go on the road to Baltimore, a tough environment, Saturday night, that tough Ravens team. The Titans are all banged up, and they beat him. And the kicker that comes in that they just signed to come, Gary Anderson comes in and wins the game. I mean, it was just an amazing moment. for that football team, for that franchise. I mean, there are big moments about history. We'll talk to John McClain at 9:30. There was a moment in 1989 where the Steelers beat the Oilers on New Year's Eve on an improbable field goal. So things like that that go on, you remember, with these football teams.
615-737-1025. You can weigh in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Colton Sisson is going to join us in just a few minutes. As I mentioned, the Predators get their 3-0 win at Bridgestone Arena, the second shutout of the season for UC Saros. Obviously, opening night was the first, and then they win 3-0 against Chicago. I thought it was interesting. Andrew Brunette said after the game that it was good, it was bad, it was ugly, and it was great all at the same time. That was pretty much how he described the game after his team won. And, you know, the score will tell you, well, the Predators dominated. I wouldn't say it was that.
Say that again. He described the game as how?
It was good, bad, ugly, and beautiful.
That described both my marriages. So thank you, Andrew Brunette, for that. I appreciate that.
And so I thought that was a pretty good way to sum it up. But, I mean, UC Saros continues to do what he needs to do to help his team win. And I know that they all appreciate him. Colton Sissons joins us now here on the Chasing Big Joe Show. Colton, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, guys. Thanks. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. I was just setting this up. 3-0, the win last night, the second shutout of the year for UC Saros. And once again, he does whatever he does to help you guys win.
Yeah. Yeah, Drew's was sharp when we needed him last night. Obviously, there's some lulls there when he wasn't seeing too much action. And then, you know, there's some power play opportunities where there's some attempts and looks. And, yeah, he was dialed in.
I know you're focused on what you're doing, but when you see him, you know, make some of the saves that he makes and do the things that he does, obviously you play with Pecorine and saw a lot of the same stuff. Do you find yourself just – you know, still being amazed at some of the things he can do?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I mean, he does it so often that it maybe loses a little bit of the specialness just because we see it pretty frequently, but certainly lifts the bench up and gets the boys pretty fired up. So he does a good job of that. We love watching him do his thing in there.
Colton, you guys play so many games back-to-back, and you know, you have a game on Tuesday, practice today, game Thursday. How much time do you guys get in for strength training? I'm always curious about that because I know you guys are always on the ice. How much time do you guys do strength training?
Not much, to be honest. You know, we do a couple exercises on practice days, and, you know, occasionally post game, we'll get some work in, depending on what our schedule is looking like. But as far as strength or kind of lifting stuff, it's nothing too extreme throughout the season. We just don't have the time to recover.
Can you? How fast could you run a mile?
I have no idea. I don't like running.
I'm always curious about the shape, you know, because, you know, all the four major sports, you guys train so differently, but I'm always curious how a great athlete, conditioned athlete like yourself, could run a mile if you had to run a mile. I mean, you could run a mile, right?
I can certainly run a mile, yeah. I just can't say I've timed myself recently.
Colton Sissons is with us from the Nashville Predators. You're having a great start to a season, personally. I mean, 11 goals already through 38 games. I know you don't, you know, focus on personal accolades like that, but it has to feel good to know that, you know, you're contributing and scoring when you contribute in so many other ways as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's certainly something that I do pride myself in on producing for us on the offensive front, along with all the other things that I've kind of honed in over the years, but, you know, having a lot of opportunity and being on that top unit, that's the power play unit, that is, that's performing quite well, has certainly helped some of those totals, you know, be on pace for hopefully one of my best years ever.
Why do you think that Gus has fit so well with you guys? Because I feel like every night now, I mean, I'm hearing his name called.
Yeah. I mean, he was, I mean, really just a pleasant surprise how good of a player and how smart he is and how crafty he is. It's been really impressive to watch. He's fit right in with Factor and Phil on that top line. Those guys have some nice chemistry together, and he's been tremendous on our power play. I mean, he basically just give him the puck and we break in more often than not. So he's been great.
Talked to Colton Sisson this morning, the Preds with the big win last night. Great road trip, Colton, you guys were on. What was that like after the game Saturday night in Washington, getting one from the Caps? Because we're listening to this back here, and we're screaming and yelling. I can only imagine what it was like after the game for you guys.
Yeah, it was a big win. Obviously, a little stressful down the stretch there with having a goal disallowed late, and then a big ask Kate getting in there for the shootout and stopping a couple of his Russian comrades, which was pretty awesome to see. So I think everyone was starting up for asking more than anything.
I know you've been in the league now for quite a while, but when you see like an Ovechkin do a shootout or one of the big names, do you take a moment to watch and just see? I know you're playing a game, but does a small part of you, just a little bit of a fan, to get to watch a guy like that? And, of course, you got great teammates as well, do their thing in a shootout like that. Do you look at that in kind of a different way?
Maybe a very, very small part. Certainly just hoping that we get a big save, more than anything, of course. But, yeah, there's definitely some guys that have that presence out there that, you know, can catch yourself a little bit watching them from that point of view, I guess.
Talking with Colton Sissons, Predators forward. So Calgary comes to town tomorrow night. It's 90s night at Bridgestone Arena, which is – going to be fun, obviously, celebrating 25 years of the Nashville Predators. You're a 90s kid. Looking forward to that?
Yeah, I guess so. It'd be good.
He's like,
I think we had several kids in the 2000s born now, so there's only a few of us left.
Yeah, Colton, I don't know how to tell you this, but at 30 years old, you're considered old on the team, so... not trying to make you feel bad. I'm right there with you, but you know, that's just how it goes.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. Thank you.
Well, good luck tomorrow night against Calgary. We appreciate you doing this, this morning. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Colton Sissons joining us here on the program.
Colton,
I mean,
Sissons.
I got him beat by 6 years. I mean, 30's still pretty young. So
I didn't get a chance to ask him what he's doing today. That was always my go-to.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I took that away
with
from
the Preds. I'm like, what are you doing on the day off, man?
And they're not practicing today, so you know.
Oh gosh, it would have been a great day to hang out. We could have gone and got some coffee in Green Hills.
That would have been fun. All right, reset our question of the day, JoJo.
All right, 20 years ago today, Gary Anderson kicked the improbable field goal in the playoffs versus the Ravens. He had just turned 72. He was living in some remote fishing village in Canada, and he kicked the field goal. So we got to start thinking, what's your favorite Titan moment? We're positive today. Non-Music City miracle, okay? Give us a moment that maybe we'd forgotten about or one that's special to you. Titan moment as we wind down the season for the Tennessee Titans, being off the Gary Anderson kick 20 years ago today.
John McClain coming up at 9:30. Looking forward to that conversation with him because more surrounding Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon. Tune into 93.3 Classic Hits tonight for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders are at home facing Reinhardt, with pregame beginning at 6 and the tip-off at 6:30. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. More Chase and Big Joe coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. John McClain from Houston coming up in just a few minutes at the bottom of the hour. But our question of the day that we have thrown out there on Twitter and also these airwaves, your favorite Titans moment that is not – the Music City Miracle.
Based off of 20 years ago today, Gary Anderson with the field goal to beat the Ravens in that big game up there. Michael on Twitter says his moment is the Josh Norman stiff arm. And that's what we're looking for, things like that that maybe we'd forgotten about. Because if you go back and watch the Josh Norman stiff arm, the reaction of Taylor Lewan and the guys on the bench when you slow it down is just simply fantastic, because that's something Josh Norman will never, ever live down. And it's great in real time. It's even better in slow time.
So do you follow, I think, Bob McHenry or whatever is his name? He does fake play-by-play where he cusses and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I don't find him talking about, yes.
Yeah, so he did one for that, and, like, his commentary, he's like, sit down, you little, like, I laugh every time at
that's
that.
Good.
Jason Big Joe, presented by Regal Realty Group here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Hair Metal Henry says, favorite Titan moment, firing Ken Wesenhunt. I will never forget that. Because
on a Monday,
it was. So on Friday, after the shows, we would record like a promo that would run all weekend and be like, hey, coming up on Monday show, you know, this is what we got. And so, you know, on Friday, you don't really know what you're going to do Monday yet, because you got to let the weekend play out. Like, the games had to play out, you know, the Titans were bad, but
right.
And so I'll never forget Darren cutting a promo and be like, you never know. And that was what ran all weekend. And then getting ready for the show, he calls. I'm like literally getting here. He calls me and goes, Titans just fired Wesenhunt. Get ready. Because I, at that point, had never really gone through that. I guess I had gone through Munchak, but, you know, nothing like mid-season and stuff like that. And so that was a wild day.
It was before the Saints game that week, too.
Yep.
As
and
well.
Then Malarkey takes over and they go and they beat New Orleans and everything, but that was certainly a big moment. 1545, and there's been a lot of votes for this one, beating the Patriots in the playoffs in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of Vrabel's best coaching jobs, because he out-Belichicked Belichick.
Yep, that was Tom Brady's final game as a Patriot,
yep.
too. And
who picked him off?
That bonehead Logan Ryan. Can't stand Logan Ryan. Cannot stand that man.
Clinton, Clarksville, Henry's 99 yard against Buffalo. Does he mean Jacksonville, or did he have one against? Was the stiff arm 99 yards?
Stiff arm was against Buffalo.
I know, but how long was
Jacksonville?
That's what I thought.
Stiff arm was like a 5 yard run.
Okay, that was a Thursday night game.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was Fox. Right. Yep.
The stiff arm, if I recall, was the COVID game where they played on like a Tuesday.
I think you're correct. The 99-yard one was a Thursday.
Yeah, yes. Now he's had a few big runs, but I think the 99 yards was a Thursday. Jacksonville.
Because
yeah.
He almost stiff-armed Corey Davis. Remember, he turned around and got there. 7491 says, the comeback versus the Giants in 06, they were down 21 in the fourth. They went 24-21. Pac-Man had two interceptions and a long punt return. I do remember, though, was it Matthew Kiwakunuka? Was that his name? Who wrapped up Vince Young? And was going to bring him to the ground, and he thought they'd blow a whistle, and they didn't. And so Vince Young scrambled out. And,
I do remember that.
That was actually – that was 06. And he hit – I forget who he hit down the – was it Brandon Jones? For that play and moved on down the field. The 99-yarder in 2000 drive in 2009 when he hit Kenny Britt in the back of the end zone versus the Cardinals was
– yeah.
Was fan – I just – if we would – we could do a whole segment again on the what if Vince Young had been – an all-pro, fantastic quarterback.
So I heard Robbie Rexroad and Kaharski talking about it this morning of, you know, if this is Derrick Henry's last game with the Titans, you know, where do you put him in Titans lore? Is he the greatest Titan of all time? You know, a lot of people say McNair. And I thought Paul made some good points on McNair, why it's not McNair. But, you know, they're just that – and Robbie goes – what's interesting about this conversation is, because it morphed into, was he the most marketable Titan ever? And I would say that's probably true, you know. But Vince Young could have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he was early on. Like, he was rookie of the year, and when he doing, like, the Campbells, and he was on Madden. I mean, there was
– he shot a massive Reebok commercial that they scrapped after his meltdown in 2008. Jim has a good one. This might be the most underrated Titans moments never talked about. Eddie George looking up at the Jumbotron in Indianapolis in the playoff game. He makes a long run so he could see where the guys were behind him. That's an iconic moment.
Oh, the 99 season.
When he's looking up and they beat Peyton up there in Indianapolis and running down the field. And that is an amazing moment because Eddie George outran that entire team, that secondary. That's what you saw how fast Eddie George was at the time. Pretty good.
Josh in Ashland City. Chris Johnson to not only get the 2,000-yard season, but to score a touchdown on the run that put him over 2,000 yards.
He would have had over 2,100 yards, but they called an awful holding call on Ahmad Hall that brought it back
in that
last game. Awful, awful, awful call by the refs. And Chris Johnson, you know, that season, it spiraled down. But the last four or five games, Fisher was on a mission to get Chris Johnson. He'll never admit it, but we were watching that game, those practices, that team every day to get over 2,000 yards, and he got it.
You'll like this one. Caleb and Mount Juliet, the Finnegan-Andre Johnson fight.
Yeah. Well, Andre Johnson, boy, if he goes in the Hall of Fame, put that on the video board behind him. That was an epic
beat. Well, and Finnegan and Derek had, like, it wasn't a fight, but they had, like, a little spat. That
2008 season, yeah, but Andre Johnson did. Andre Johnson had the beat down.
Yeah. They both got thrown out, right?
Yes, they did. That's right. Yeah. Gosh, you guys are rolling in. Anytime we do this stuff, you guys are great with all these.
Just keep Skyler on the Henry front. Come on now. Henry carried this organization for 4 years, literally carried them to the AFC Championship just for his quarterback to lose it for them with three picks. Eddie and McNair had each other. You got some stuff confused there, Skyler. The three picks was the Bengals game, not the AFC Championship game.
Correct.
And Derek was hurt the year that they were the one seed and then got to the Bengals game. He played in that game, but he wasn't very effective.
This is funny from Donovan. This is why I love autocorrect. Going back to our interview earlier, he says Colton Citizens is the most complete player on the Preds team. He's a Swiss Army knife. We agree, Donovan, and keep your auto correct on because that made me laugh.
Shout out to Ricky. He said when I won hit a $5,000 parlay this season in the Texans game.
It's like Fight Club, man. Don't talk about it.
I know.
You know, it never happened.
It never happened.
you never bring it up.
Coming up next, our man we always bring up, John McClain from Houston. We'll get his thoughts on this weekend, a very, very big Week 18 for the Texans, the team that he covers, and also the Mike Vrabel Rancarthon stuff just won't go away. We'll discuss that with him. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios. 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. John McClain coming up in just a minute or so. Hey, this Monday, tune in at 6:30 as Washington and Michigan face off in the college football playoff national championship game. Only on 102.5, 106.3, the game. That's presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Actually, it'll be 7 o'clock after the Commodore Hour, but we will have that for you on both 102.5 and 106.3 the game and 94.9 the fan. Looking forward to that.
That'll be a great game, man. And Houston.
I'm excited.
Who else is in Houston?
John McClain.
That's right.
That's right. He joins us now. John, good morning. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm great, guys. I've got a history lesson for you before
we get
into the playoff race. Today is the 40th anniversary of the Oilers hiring a head coach, Hugh Campbell, who's the only time in history I have ever seen a team hire a head coach just to get a quarterback. Warren Moon was a free agent coming out of the Canadian Football League. Hugh Campbell had coached him with Edmonton. Campbell was with the Los Angeles franchise in the United States Football League. The Oilers general manager, Lad Herzig, had been pursuing Moon for a year with his agent Lee Steinberg and was determined to get him. And it came down, there were teams like the Buccaneers, the Giants, the Oilers, Seahawks were the final four, came down to the Oilers and Seahawks. Warren had won a Rose Bowl with Washington. He lived in Seattle. Everybody thought he was going to Seattle, but boy, the ace in the hole was hiring his head coach, Hugh Campbell. Warren signed here, and then Campbell was gone less than 2 years later because he did a terrible job and replaced by the most controversial coach in the franchise's history, and that would be Jerry Glanville.
My goodness. We love history lessons, John. Thank you for that. Hey, before we talk NFL, I know the national championship is going to be down there in Houston in your backyard. Are people disappointed that the Longhorns did not make it?
Oh, my God. Yes, Joe, everybody. Now, I'll say everybody. No, everybody hates the Longhorns, which are numerous. We're glad they didn't get in. I personally wanted him in because Mattress Mac, who I do a video with every week, he had a promotion going, buy an X amount of furniture, and if the Longhorns win the national championship, you get it all free. And he had bet a lot on the Longhorns. And I know he has two monstrous suites at the stadium. And everything will still be sold out. It might be the best game, Washington versus Michigan, but people here were really bummed, not just to not have the Longhorns, but not have Alabama, because Alabama people would have been really fired up. All their fans would have been able to get here easily. But if you guys are looking for a ticket pretty cheap, you can get one, because I think Darren Revell said it was the biggest drop he'd ever seen. They've gone from like 2,200 cheap ticket to 650.
Wow. John McClain joins us on the program. This story that I'm about to bring up is like a cockroach. It just won't go away. It keeps coming up. The Mike Vrabel, Rand Carthon, there is a rift. They don't like each other. They're not getting along. Jason Lockenfora has brought it up now. Former GM Michael Lombardi brought it up on his podcast. And, you know, I know that Vrabel was very passionate yesterday. He hates losing. It sucks to lose. He said some other words I can't say on the radio. But why won't this story go away, John?
Because media people keep it up. Has anybody in Nashville said that? Anybody covers a team like you guys do? And it's all from afar. Mike Lombardi also said Mike Vrabel's contract was up, and it's not. And so I remember Mike Lombardi, who I like, had a report, and I wrote it, that C.J. Stroud was hard to get along with, basically called him a prima donna without using those words. And nothing could be further from the truth. I never heard that anywhere else. Never heard about the S2 cognition test, of course. Everybody did. But I never heard anything. And he's an incredible teammate. So people hear it. They don't make it up, but they hear it from other people. And I still remember one Sunday I got Jason, Lockenfora. His nickname was No Lockenfirma for a while. Jason Lockenfora had a quote that said the Texans general manager Rick Smith was going to be fired. This was before the last game. He was going to be moved into the ticket office, and that they had already begun their search for a new general manager. So I called Bob McNair. This was on a Sunday before the game. He said it's absolutely not true. 4 years later, Rick resigned, and I'm surprised he didn't go, "We had it first." If you keep track of all the, and people are if smart to say could or would. If you say it will happen, boy, you better be right. Like in New England, it's interesting because Tom Curran, who's covered that team forever, reported weeks ago the decision to get rid of Belichick was made after their trip to England. Ian Rappaport, who's covered that team a long time, but not locally now, said that's not true. So after it's over, of course, Curran can say, "Well, I had that weeks ago," and Rappaport will say, "Well, he just determined to get rid of Belichick." So that's the way it is today, because anything anybody reports gets picked up a lot of places. I personally have no idea if Mike Vrabel and Rand Cawthorn get along. And I haven't heard anything like that. And I've talked to a lot of people. But I'll tell you this, if they don't, then Amy Adams Strunk will do something about it. But I have not heard that except from national people.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, of how much is it that maybe they disagree on some things, and you're going to have that. It's well, also the first year that they've worked together. So, I mean, they're having to figure that out.
They're going to have disagreements. All coaches and general managers do. Sometimes they can be heated. They can be shouting. But the key is you don't make it personal and you don't hold it against them. It's like D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio have had a great draft, free agent period. Free agents like Derek Barnett, who continues to be outstanding, the Nashville and UT, Nashville native and UT product, and they signed him off the street. And so they've made, but they admit, man, we have disagreements. And so I remember one time Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese had a shouting match so loud in Nashville, I said it could be heard all the way to Houston. And but they continued to work together. They continued to put a good product on the field. So sometimes people hear about an organization. Sometimes players hear about it, tell their agent. The agents can't wait to curry favors with the national media. So I put a stock in about what I do the weather. I believe about 10% of it.
Has there ever been this the perfect harmony in a GM and a head coach? I think it's like the perfect marriage. I mean, you're going to argue, you're going to fight a little bit, but you're going to agree a lot. So all this is kind of like nonsensical because, yeah, they're going to have disagreements from time to time, but has there ever been a perfect GM-head coach relationship?
The best that I can see, Joe, in the NFL right now is Pete Carroll and John Schneider. And Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have a good one going on, but not as long as those other two. Now, both those head coaches have final say on personnel. A lot of people don't know it. I hear people go, man, John Lynch made a great draft. Well, draft choice. Well, Kyle Shanahan has to sign off on it. It's in his contract. But if they can, and you know they have disagreements all the time, but they continue to work together and do a really good job together. And it's because they win. They don't have winning seasons every year. The 49ers started 0-9 under Kyle Shanahan. DeMeco Ryans was on that roster. And they thought, oh, my goodness, are we ever going to win? Then they trade for Jimmy Garoppolo and win 5 in a row. So, you know, during that 0-9 start, they weren't having some serious disagreements
right.
about personnel decisions. I think this time next year, you guys will have a much better understanding of the relationship between Cawthorn and Vrabel. Vrabel likes things done his way. Cawthorn's been wanting to be a general manager probably since he figured out he couldn't be a player like his daddy. So he's a GM for the first time, and he's got ways he would like to do it. And, you know, they've got to meet in the middle, and this is a big off season for them, as everybody knows, because they need talent. And so I think maybe that's true. Maybe they hate each other, but I doubt. How can you work up a hate for somebody you haven't even known a year?
Exactly. John, we have talked about head coaches, coaches of the year. You're down in Houston with a guy that I think should get serious consideration for coach with your DeMeco Ryans, because you even said yourself you had them winning, what, 3 or 4 games?
They were projected to be the second worst team in the league to Arizona. In Arizona, by virtue of giving them the pick that turned into Will Anderson, who has a chance to be Defensive Rookie of the Year and has been tremendous, everybody thought Arizona's going to have the first two picks. They'd take quarterback Caleb Williams and wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. and be set for years. Now, they're not going to get the number one pick, and the Texans are going to have a pick somewhere in the 20s, I think. And if the Texans win on Saturday, right now they have a winning record. They're guaranteed of a winning record after they've won combined for 7 wins the last 2 years and 11 the last 3 years and 3 last season. The transformation has been unbelievable. And it starts with Stroud and like Will Anderson. And so it's but Kevin Stefanski is going to win it. He's got it in the bag because of Joe Flacco, because of all the attention Flacco's getting, and Flacco has done a great job, and so has Stefanski. But, you know, they didn't win 3 games last year. And, of course, I'm partial to DeMeco Ryans, but Stefanski's going to win it.
We'll have more with John coming up next. Get his thoughts on a big Week 18 that will set the playoffs up for the NFL. John McClain, more with him next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Continuing our conversation with John McClain from Houston. And it is Week 18, the final week of the regular season. John, and teams vying for playoff spots, including the team you cover down in Houston and the Texans, as they'll play Saturday night against the Colts. How do you feel about this matchup, and what might happen with Houston after a improbable season?
It's very It's very interesting because the Colts won the first game here, 31-20, I believe it was, second game of the season. And that was the first time after they lost at Baltimore in opener, we saw what C.J. Stroud could become playing catch-up. He threw for 384 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, at a 106 rating. And we're, okay, well, that's why they drafted him second overall. And I think it would be so interesting, because if the Texans can win in Indianapolis, and they're 4-4 in their last eight games there, including the win last year that had them to settle for Stroud because they lost the Bryce Young pick by beating Colts, it would be so interesting if the Texans won. They're all going to have to be pulling for the Titans on Sunday. And the only thing better would be is if the Titans were wearing Columbia blue, which infuriates everybody here. And if they were, they'd still have to be pulling for them to upset the Jaguars so the Texans could win the AFC South. And I'll give you another quick history lesson. People, I'm sorry if I do this too much, but things pop in my head. If the Titans win and the Texans win, Texans will host the Browns for the second time in 3 weeks. Browns pounded them here. 1988, last game of the season in Cleveland, the winner hosted the wild card game against the other team. Browns won. Oilers go back up for the wild card win. Oilers win for the wild card game. Oilers win. Marty Schottenheimer got fired by Art Modell after that game, which turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to him, because then he went to Kansas City and became one of the greatest coaches in NFL history.
Wow, there you go. More history with John McClain, for sure. How poetic is it that what is likely going to be Bill Belichick's final game as the head coach of the Patriots is against the Jets? Both teams are bad, but just with the history there, I find that to be funny.
Oh, yeah, because you know, he was going to be the head coach, promoted by Bill Parcells, his mentor, and he resigned on a napkin at the news conference. And the Jets and Parcells went ballistic. The only reason Kraft hired him was because Kraft hated Parcells after the way Parcells left New England. And so it ended up Paul Tagliabue, the commissioner, had to get involved. And when he did, it cost, he fined them. They had to give over draft choices. But I'm guessing it worked. It was worth it. And then I did a thing for the NFL Network about 3 years ago. What is? What if this had happened? What if that had happened? And I said, has there ever been a bigger what if than if Mo Lewis, the Jets linebacker, had not hit Drew Bledsoe in a preseason in 2001 and forced second-year quarterback Tom Brady into the lineup? What if Bledsoe, who was the star of the team, the starting quarterback, his job was not in jeopardy. Everybody loved Bledsoe. But if Lewis had not hit him and Bledsoe had stayed there and finished his career, whatever would have happened to Tom Brady?
That is a million-dollar question there, John. Just when you think you've seen everything in football, along comes Saturday night's game between the Lions and the Cowboys. Have we still not processed what went on, John? That was just bizarre.
No, it's the Lions got too cute. They tried to confuse the Cowboys by sending three tackles over there to the referee. They confused the referee. Obviously, they confused the Cowboys because Decker caught the touchdown pass. And then Dan Campbell said, well, I told them before the game we were going to do it. In those meetings before the game, the referee's not even in it. A couple of the others are. So Dan Campbell, who tried to get too cute and it backfired, should learn when to kick instead of going for two all the time. Had he kicked early in the game a field goal instead of going for a failed fourth down, as Troy Aikman said, man, he should take the points here, it would have been a moot point at the end of the game. So you live and learn, and the league sent out a thing to every team this week reminding them of how you're supposed to check in as an eligible receiver. What the referee should have done, and he was trying to hurry up the game, he just barely listened and kept going, he should have stopped. Or the Lions should have had a player fall down and get a cramp. And while that player was getting a cramp, then they go over to the referee and say, hey, by the way, just to make sure you're clear on this, it's 68, not 70.
Yeah, that was the thing. Why, if you're not going to check in, why go talk to the ref? And I kind of feel sorry for the ref on that because the Lions sent all those guys over to him and trying to figure out what was going on. So, yeah, that whole thing, like the deception and deceiving, I fall in that. That was just crazy. Just send the one guy over, right?
Yeah, you don't ever – they'll never do that again. You know, you have to announce who's eligible. And as soon as they announced 70 – and the Lions knew it was 68. That's when somebody should have dropped to the ground like they were having some kind of seizure. And so they could go over and clarify it to them. And, you know, they're not going to do it again. And teams are aware of it. And it gets like how many times last week against the Titans, I get so tired here at 61 as an eligible receiver. And so, but we know who's an eligible receiver when he comes in for the Titans. And that's the way it was supposed to be in that game. And then Dan Campbell admitted the next day they were trying to confuse him, and they confused the wrong guy.
Exactly. John, during that game, they honored Jimmy Johnson with the Ring of Honor at Cowboy Stadium. And we go back to the hypotheticals you had a moment ago about Bledsoe and Tom Brady. Had Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones worked it out, how many Super Bowls consecutively do you think they would have won? Because they didn't. The team didn't start getting dismantled until 96, 97. They could have possibly won four or five in a row. Your thoughts on that?
Well, they could have, but free agency was going to kill them. Guys wanted, yeah, they want the ring, but they want to get paid. They would have lost. They started losing players. But I don't know the disharmony between those two. Used to be good friends. And I heard Jimmy one time, when they were still on the outs, say the problem was Jerry used to stay up in his office and left the coaching and the personnel to me. And one time when he was on the sidelines, he said, man, I'd like to do some of this. And I knew we were in trouble because he wanted to get involved in personnel. And so Jimmy walked away with a $2 million check after only 5 years. And it's a shame if you're a Cowboys fan to never know what those two could have accomplished. And they actually could have done something the Cowboys haven't done since then, 27 years, actually go back to an NFC championship game.
John, why, you know, Jimmy's a great example of a coach that has most of the say, that it works. Obviously with Belichick and Brady, it worked. But I feel like most of the time when the coach gets all the power, it doesn't work. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'll give you an example. As I said earlier, guys like John Lynch and Pete Carroll and Andy Reid, they have all the power, even though they never say it. They let their GM get credit for the draft and free agency. But like here, as soon as Bill O'Brien got hired from Penn State, he told me off the record, he said, a coach can't win consistently in the NFL unless he has control of personnel. And I thought, uh-oh, Rick Smith, the GM, had done a really good job. I said, he better watch his back. And, man, he needed to watch his back. But it was 4 years of their infighting that just about ripped this organization apart. And then Rick resigned to take care of his wife who had cancer. And they won through 2019 but couldn't get past the division round. It's just so much. If the head coach has a big ego and he defies his personnel people and his scouts, and he wants everything done exactly his way, he's going to make mistakes. That's why it doesn't work a lot, especially for guys who are doing it for the first time.
John, 20 years ago today, Gary Anderson kicked that field goal in the playoffs. The Titans beat the Ravens, an improbable game. You know, they called Gary Anderson off the fishing lake up in Canada somewhere. I was an Oilers fan in the 80s. Who was the kicker for the Steelers that beat the Oilers in the playoff game on New Year's Eve night?
Gary Anderson, and cost Jerry Glanville his job. So everybody was not happy losing here at the Astrodome to the Steelers. But at that point, everybody was tired of Glanville. But it was a killer because the Oilers were favored and they lost. It was, I think, a 50-yarder.
That was Gary. I had no idea.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Everything. Gary Anderson, yeah, he kicked to like, what, he's 70?
Yeah, he sure did. I did that. Real quick before I let you go, when you covered the Oilers, what was the most deflating loss you ever had? For some reason, the Joe Montana playoff game in 93 stands out to me. I don't know why.
No, the year before, Buffalo, they led in the playoffs 3 years in a row. They led in Denver, And John Elway had a long drive in which he said that was more satisfying to him than the drive in Cleveland, because a lot of people thought that was a fluke. And the guy that was a bad snap to win the game for the Broncos, and the holder did a great job of getting the ball down, and that holder was Gary Kubiak, former Oilers ball boy. And then, but that game, then the next year they go to Buffalo. When you blow a game 35-3 midway through the third quarter, and Bud had left early because he thought it was over to go to his plane, and oops, and I've still never been in a stadium. That game wasn't sold out, so it wasn't televised locally. And by the end of it, when they had gone ahead, and they actually, the Oilers had to, Al Del Greco had to kick a field goal to go to overtime. And then the Bills won, but that stadium was full, the parking lot was full. Everybody in Western New York wanted to be just in the environment, the atmosphere. So next year, Willie Davis, who went on to play for the Titans, made the best play of his career, Montana's last miracle, and that was 93. And then they didn't get in the playoffs again until they got to Nashville.
Wow. Well, great stuff as always, John. Appreciate it, and should be interesting to see how the final week of the season shakes out. We'll talk next week.
And all the Texans fans are sending all this love to the Titans. What will probably happen, the Texans will lose, and the Titans will win, and it'll be a moot point.
Yep.
Thank you.
They'll blame the Oilers jerseys, I'm sure. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. John McClain joining us every Wednesday at 9:30. Coming up next, Mike Vrabel was very passionate yesterday, and I got to tell you, it got my attention. Want to discuss that with you next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.